Hi, everyone. I know recently we announced we were going to 2 episodes a week and then 3 episodes a week. But you know what? There are just too many episodes. So we are going to back to 5 episodes a week. Still a reduction from 7, but there were just too many interviews scheduled, and I didn't want to make all the authors wait for too long. So I hope you can keep up with me. Listen to 1 a week as you're on your way to work or on your way home or putting your kids to bed or whatever it is you're doing. Moms don't have time to read books now 5 times a week.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, this is Zivi Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And speaking of books, I have 2 of my own books coming out this spring and summer. Princess Charming is a picture book, which debuts on April 19th, and Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, comes out on July 1st, and it is truly a labor of love. I hope you'll pre-order, order, and join me on tour as I go across the country. You can find out more at zivyowens.com or bookendsmemoir.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at zivyowens because I always post about everything. Enjoy the show. Gary Jannetty is the author of Start Without Me. I'll be there in a minute. Gary is a 4-time Emmy-nominated writer and producer who is the showrunner and creator of HBO Max's The Prince. He got his start writing on several network series before joining Fox's Family Guy, where he was on the original writing staff and went on to pen many memorable episodes featuring Brian and Stewie. He then wrote on NBC's Will and Grace, where he rose to executive producer and showrunner. Jannetty also created, executive produced, and wrote all episodes for the ITV PBS British sitcom Vicious, starring Sir Ian McKellen and Sir Derek Jacobi. His popular Instagram account of over 900,000 followers has been featured and praised in such publications as the New York Times, People, and Vanity Fair. Jannetty's first book, Do You Mind If I Cancel?, became an instant New York Times bestseller. He lives in Los Angeles with his husband, TV personality and fashion expert, Brad Goreski. You can follow him on Instagram and Twitter at Gary Jannetty. Welcome, Gary. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Thanks, Zivi. I'm really happy to be here.
Oh, as I was just saying to you, I literally just recommended your book on Good Day LA as a book to laugh out loud. So I am a huge fan of the book and of your writing in general. So
thank you. I really appreciate that. And yeah, thanks for the shout out.
Also, so I had the PDF of your book on my phone, and we were stuck in traffic last night going to this book launch event in Brooklyn with like a lot of people on my team, and everybody was like getting, you know, tired of being in the, and I was like, you guys, I'm going to read Gary Jannetty's book to you out loud.
How did it go?
It was so great. So there were like two cars of us, and the other car that got there, everybody was like nauseous and in the worst mood, and we all fell out of the car laughing and having
Okay, good. Yeah. All right. If I could help a car ride.
Yeah, you helped a car ride. Yeah. So mission accomplished.
Yes, definitely.
Why don't you tell listeners a little bit about this book and, you know, even about both books, why you've started compiling these memories, which ones you pick, how you do it, and all of that.
You know, it kind of happened just by happenstance. I met with James Melia, who is my editor now, and he asked if, off of my Instagram, his popularity, he was like, would you ever be interested in doing a book? And I had actually been thinking about doing a book. I had always wanted to do it. As you could tell, when you read them, I talk about how I see myself as a writer. I'm making air quotes if you're just listening. But I don't actually, you know, write. So I had this romantic idea of it that existed, not based in any kind of reality. But that was something that I felt like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I don't know what it's going to be, but this is something I've been wanting to do. I started off wanting to do it. And now, you know, I'm assuming the universe is telling me that now, I'll use Instagram as the universe, is telling me that now is the time. So Zibby, I didn't know what I was going to do when I started. I had an idea. I just knew I wanted to do short essays. And because I've written in sitcoms for so many years, you know, I kind of like to do things economically. So the essays are kind of, you know, I've compacted my life into very tidy little, you know, chapters. But I just thought of what are the things that I still remember. And at this point in my life, you know, when you're kind of 50, I'll call myself 50 generously, and you have enough to look back on. You know, if I wrote it at 35, I would be more self-conscious about what I was talking about, because you know, you're almost too close to it. But at this point, you think, I'm still remembering these things. I wonder why. That's like, these are the things that stuck in my head. The things I've kind of written about, these moments from my life, they just are things that I still kind of think about. So I figured I'll write about those. So I would just like write one kind of sentence, you know, or even a word down, you know, write about in this book, write about Irene, my next door neighbor that I grew up with, write about your obsession with the Carol Burnett Show. You still kind of think about that. And it just started from that. So I just kind of, and then as I wrote them, I felt there was naturally they connected together in some kind of almost, not to sound too pretentious, but in almost like a dreamy kind of way, you know, it's not like a real straightforward narrative thread by any stretch.
But that's fine.
It's kind of all over the place.
No, it's great.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place.
It's how we think about life, really.
I think so. I don't think things are as tidy, you know, as we would like them to be. You know, we kind of don't know, you know, we jump from one thought to the next and one thing connects us to the other. And then we forget our original thought and then we go all the way back to it maybe, or, you know.
I love how, so I'm 45. So I got like all the references to.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah.
Yes, life. But I like how you're constantly like telling the younger reader, you know, you're like, even things like when you talk about like the pen pals, like I totally made pen pal friendships. I had a pen pal from Paris who I met in Jamaica. We were pen pals for like 2 years. And every time that like airmail paper came in, I was like, oh my gosh.
Exciting.
Now, of course, I didn't visit her like you in your story, which is so funny.
Yeah, I know. I did. And it was actually probably in real life a little bit even more painful than it was in writing about. But yeah, another thing that because my dad worked for a cruise line. So I talk about, you know, how much that impacted my life and how many cruises we went on. Yes. And this older woman, once we became pen pals. And yeah. And the excitement of that relationship of getting letters and passing letters in the mail. But that are just, you know, really, I don't know, you know, what we were writing about actually, because I was a kid and she was a married woman, but it was all very,
You said at one point it was like just one conversation painfully drawn out over 6 months.
You know, like there was 6 months over by like 10 years. Like it was like that, you know, it was, yes, the slowest conversation drips coming through the mail, you know.
And even how you point out in so many instances, like, but wait, you know,
why were they hanging out with me? You don't think about it until you're older. Like, what was the 25-year-old couple doing with like a 15-year-old boy or whatever?
Yeah, I think part of it too was I always kind of was more comfortable around older people. You know, it wasn't like they sought me out. I sought out, you know, people that were older. So
I think there should be like a whole, I don't know, social network of old souls. You know, like you, I identify as an old soul, like you're an old
Me
soul.
Too.
There are all these old souls out there where I was like, at these like seventh grade sleepovers, and I was like literally reading my book with the mom in the other room, you know, just being like, okay.
Yeah, I was always reading. I read Mommy Dearest when I was a kid. Like I read everything. I read the books my mother read too. They were around, whatever bestsellers were there. I just picked them up. Nobody ever, The Amityville Horror, I think I was like 10. I don't know. Nobody ever said that's not appropriate for you. They might have rolled their eyes. Nobody was paying that much attention. You know, my mother wasn't looking like what you were reading. I had a book. Right. You know, it was like, it didn't really, whatever the book was. But yeah, it was always, also there wasn't anything called young adult fiction at the time. You know, there was like little kids and then there was, you know, full on adults. Yeah. So yeah, which was kind of nice. I just skipped ahead.
Totally. I went straight to Judith Krantz from like Judy Blume
totally.
To Judith Krantz.
Judy Blume. Yes, Judy Blume. They passed that book around. Was it Forever or something? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know. So funny. And you also do talk, oh, by the way, your sister was like the most hilarious character. How you talked about her. Like, and you were like, you know, it's not so easy being like a gay boy in Queens, Maria, you know. And anyway, I don't know. I'm like, this probably is making no sense to anyone listening. I'm just like talking about the funniest parts. But it was just so funny how you developed that and your family and how you feel even now, like going back and all of that. Anyway, how do people in your life tend to feel being written about?
You know, we haven't talked that much, you know, about it. You know, they've just recently read this book, but I think they all like it. You know, everybody understands. For me, you know, it's different for everybody, obviously, but I'm looking for a way, for the most part, to celebrate the people that have been in my life in it, not to kind of bring anybody to task about any past grievances that I'm now going to settle in this. Certainly with my family, there are other people those people I changed their names and they're not usually, you know, in my life anymore. But for the most part, yeah, it's like I want to be able to celebrate the things that I have found in them that I love about them and stuff. And it's kind of, so I'm hoping that people sense that.
I love it. That's so great. How did you go from Queens, like feeling so frustrated, Wizard of Oz boy, you know, roaming the streets in Venice, to the sitcom part of your life?
You know, in my first book, for the first book, Do You Mind If I Cancel Now? Added paperback. But I talk about, I work at the Paramount Hotel as a bellman in it for two chapters. And I'm like 28 years old and I'm in terrible debt. And, you know, I kept living, I just couldn't make enough to pay for what, you know, I look at young people going to restaurants now and I only think, how do they afford this? Like, I'm looking at the prices. I'm like, there were cheap restaurants when I was in my 20s. Now everybody wants to go to all the restaurants they see in The Infatuation and Eater and on Instagram. And it's expensive. Like, it's $100 a person. Yeah. I'm like, I would be mentally like, I would have a $20 bill in my pocket and thinking like, if I spend this whole $20 on dinner, I'm like, I'm not going to be eating much tomorrow, you know, like that. And I would have to, it was always in my head. So yeah, I had gotten myself in like bad trouble of being in debt and working in the hotel. And I'm like, at 28, you're like, you can see 30. And I felt like, what am I doing? Like, I'm waiting for something to happen to me. And like, it doesn't work like that. I would work at this hotel thinking I was going to be, you know, discovered. I made air quotes again, like Lana Turner in the drugstore, for those of us, you know, who can remember. I'm too young for Lana Turner, but Google it. Anyway, yeah, somebody just be plucked out of obscurity. I thought that, you know, I'd be discovered working in this hotel and somebody would say, I see something inside you. You'd be a terrific actor on All My Children, or you'd be a wonderful writer for, you know, Vanity Fair. Like, I had, would you have a short story? I work for The New Yorker. You know, it was like, and my job was to just be like, oh, like have humility and be like, I actually do, you know, and that's how it was going to happen. And I had this kind of epiphany at one day working there where I checked in actually somebody who I went to school with, and I had carried his bags up to the room and he tried to give me a tip. And it was just like, I was just like, what's happened? I don't want to be here. Like I need to fix this. And I moved to LA. I quit and I moved to LA a couple of months. I was already living in LA a few months later, and I was teaching myself how to write for TV. I had been talking about writing that I was going to write for so long. And I was like, you have to do it now. Mm-hmm. And nobody's coming to you, you idiot. Nobody's finding you here. Nobody's looking for you. Nobody should care about your career and your future more than you do. Mm-hmm. Like, why would a stranger care more than I care? That made it all kind of, clicked into place. So I just moved to LA shortly thereafter, and I started writing and teaching myself. There was no internet, sadly. It sounds so strange to say that, but I mean, I'm sure it was, huge, bigger kind of internet-y kind of thing, but there was no Google. And I went to the Writers Guild Library and I read scripts from sitcoms. Like at the time it was like Friends and Mad About You and Seinfeld and Frasier and Roseanne. And I read these scripts and they were so well crafted. And I thought I could do this. It was by years of watching TV had kind of, unknowingly I was training my mind to kind of think like that. Like it made sense. It was a language that I already spoke. I talk about in the book, often I repeat, especially in this book, the language of boys, the language of sports and all of the things that they were interested in. It always felt to me like a language I didn't speak. I could pretend, I pick up phrases. It's like I go to France and I can order, that's what it was like. I was in France, all the time, not speaking the language. And when I finally went to the Writers Guild Library and I read these sitcom scripts, I was like, this is a language I speak and I didn't know it, in a way. I mean, even then I couldn't really articulate it like I can now looking back. So I just started doing it. I just started writing it and I was focused. I was laser focused on I am going to make this happen. It was a switch went off and it never, once I started writing, I haven't stopped, since, it was a big, kind of wake up call. And I was fortunate that a few months after I moved to LA, I got a job writing on a sitcom. I had written, I was literally I went from waiting for everything to happen to making everything happen, overnight, which also is my advice to any young people. And I think I write about that in my first book a lot. And you say, Zibia, that I was writing, write about young people compared to now and then. But that's a thing that people who were in their 20s now were like, I needed to hear that, have said, mm-hmm. or, oh my God, I have felt the same way. I have felt like this was, something was just going to magically happen kind of fall, to me as well, as opposed to, or I needed to hear that kind of thing. So yeah. Anyway, did that answer your question? I kind of went all over the place.
I don't even care. I just love listening. It's great. Yes. And that did answer my question. And
okay, I stuck a few other answers in there too.
Yeah, great.
Could you two other unasked questions.
Pile them in.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You know, you're funny in this book about Instagram and how he said something about, like, it's like having milk in the fridge. Like, just because you see it a few times a day doesn't mean you're friends.
Yeah, it's like you're people you know on Instagram.
Right, right. You said it in like, such a better
way. Yeah.
But here you are with this, like, massive following, and you're so, I mean, clever in the way you use the platform. Like, just tell me about that. Like, how... Because sometimes, because your captions are often very short, the pictures, it could have just been Twitter, you know, it's also Instagram. Like, how did you decide, like, I'm going to master these mediums and, like, tap into this whole thing and, like, all the stuff with the royal family? And, like, you've just, like, sort of hit it spot on. Was it just luck or just, I don't know, tell me about that.
You know, it wasn't like I made a decision like I'm going to become a thing on Instagram. I mean, you can't kind of, you know, make that decision because it doesn't quite work out the way you kind of think it is. I just wanted to, what I like about social media, you know, we all know the negative things about it. And there are lots of, you know, negative things, you know, but there's also a lot of positives, and it's a way to kind of connect with people. And for me, I wanted to do something different on it. I was like, well, I like to, you know, zig when everybody's zagging. You know, I like to do the thing that people aren't doing. So I'm not interested in sharing my personal life, although there are bits, I guess, of it through my husband, Brad, and mostly on his, but it's not about my personal life. It's about, you know, kind of just, I thought of it as a little TV show. I'm like, I wonder if I can use Instagram and make it kind of my own, you know, show and just do it's like the anti-Instagram almost, mm-hmm. you know, people are posting inspirational posts and quotes. I'll turn that kind of inside out because, you know, I find that it's like, it's so trite and meaningless. And you know, it's like, what's a way to kind of that I can contribute to this and I have something to say and I can use it for that. And I wonder if people will respond to that. And then when I started doing memes with Prince George, I think, and then I started developing a personality for him and started pushing how far you can go on the platform to kind of create, like, I was like treating it like it was a TV show, you know, a whole little kind of universe. And gradually, yeah, I think people started coming aboard. It was like also, it's like you find people who have a shared sensibility. Do you know what I mean? So for the most part, you know, you gather people who kind of share your outlook, as it were, a bit. But it happened totally organically. But I did intend to do my own thing. I was like, I want to do my own thing. Also, you know, when you write for television and for so long, and when I started Instagram, it was before the books, you know, for something to go from my head for you to see it on TV is a lot of steps. Mm-hmm. It's painstaking. It's a lot. And oftentimes it does not make it there along the way. There are notes and there's feedbacks and there are rewrites and there are so many things and there are months that go by and then you kind of watch it. You're like, ah, but this was an opportunity to have something in my head and now I put it out and it's right in the audience in a second and it gets a response, you know? And yeah, it's satisfying. Also, it can be satisfying in that way creatively.
Yes, there's nothing like the immediacy. Like, test out this thing.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's great. Yeah. It's totally.
That didn't work at all. Okay.
No, yeah. Like, they can't all be gems. Yeah. You know?
So what are you working on now?
Now, just for the most part, kind of working on the book, you know, taking the book out into the world. And after having spent so much time, you know, writing it, even though it's short. Like, it's so, I look at it, I'm like, it's so short, yet it took so long. People are like, I finished it in a night. I'm like, like a night. Like, I wish I could have written it in a night. So I'll be going on book tour. So I'll be taking that around and then kind of seeing what it is that I want to do next.
That's awesome. Wait, so how long did it take to write?
You know, 8 months.
Yeah, that's not bad for a book, by the way.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's not that, you know, it's not that long. So, you know, it's like, everything is my attention span. I like a book either to be this length or 3,000 pages. Like, it needs to be one or the other. If it's something, if something is like 380 pages, I'm like, 400 pages. Like, but if you tell me it's like 1,500 pages, I'm like, let me see. Like, it's like one extreme or the other.
I totally get it.
It's like, I'd rather watch a movie that's 90 minutes or 10 episode, 1 hour episodes of The Crown. But if the movie's 2.5 hours, I'm like, no.
I know. It's so crazy. None of our consumption patterns make any sense anymore.
No sense.
Well, okay. So seriously, if somebody is trying to write about their life and they want, let's say somebody thinks they're funny, but who knows if they are or not, what do they do next? Like, is it worth trying? Do you like, what medium do you like best? Like, what advice do you have for them?
First of all, you should never think you're funny. I don't think I can be funny is what I have my moments, you know, when I'm funny. And then I have many moments when I'm not. I always, you know, feel like I never tell anybody, like, yeah, it's like comedy, you know, like I'm a comedy writer. It's like, you can decide whether or not it's comedy. I'll just leave off the adjective and say writer. So, 'cause it's so subjective, right? But I would say if they were interested in writing, are you saying if they're interested, if they think, okay, so I think I have something, I think I'm funny and I would like to write. Yeah. Is that the general kind of thing? Okay. I would say, what is it you're drawn to? What do you watch? Do you watch a lot of a TV comedy? Do you watch a lot of animation? Do you read a lot? What is it? How do you absorb comedy? Like, what is it that you gravitate towards? That's what you should be writing. That's what it is. If it's like, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I think I would like to write, you know, a sitcom. It's like, no, like what, why? It's like, because I think I could do it. It's like, it's hard. Like, you have to be passionate. So what's the thing? If it's, I like comic essays or I like this kind of thing. It's like, yeah, then start doing that. Then do it. And don't be afraid. The thing I've had to learn too is, you know, don't force the funny. Like, don't try too hard. We can see when somebody's working too hard, you know? Yeah. It's like when something, I can notice it when you write like multicam sitcoms, like when Will and Grace is a multicam sitcom versus, you know, Modern Family, single camera versus, you know, animation, obviously, but they're all kind of are a bit different the way I approach them. Something that's multicam for Will and Grace, the writing I feel is better when it has more of a tossed off quality where it's not, doesn't feel tortured. Every joke isn't so, you know, so written because an audience oftentimes laughs just at the things that are more human and smaller as opposed to the finely constructed joke. You know, it's like, if something is too overthought, sometimes that kind of comes through, you know? So that's why the thing that you're passionate about, the area that you love, if whatever it is, there's no shame in anything, whatever it is. I have very high, low tastes, you know, that's what you should go towards because that's kind of how you know, that the thing that you love, don't go to the thing that you don't. It's like, you know, I want to do stand up, even though that's the hardest thing in the world to do. It's like, what are you talking about? So many people are like, I'll do stand up.
My husband and I, where were we? I think we were like maybe going to one of the million of open houses we do just for fun, even though we have no intention of buying anything. But anyway, I think we were with this woman and she was showing around a house and she was very serious the whole time. And then she happens to mention, and she's like, you know, on the weekends, you know, that, and that's where I perform my stand-up routines. And we kind of laughed like, haha. And she was serious. I'm like, you do stand-up comedy? Like, come on. No. There's no way.
Maybe she's good.
Maybe she's amazing.
Who knows? Maybe she's amazing. I know.
She probably like has her own.
But it's hard. Yeah, to me, it's like saying, I want to perform surgery. It's like, you don't just get up and do stand-up. It's like crazily difficult.
Well, but, I feel like your whole career has sort of justified the 12 hours a day you spent watching TV.
It has. Right? I didn't know. Yeah, it's completely. Yeah, it's completely. It was training for it. I didn't even know when I was in my 20s and I wanted to be a writer and I was doing all of this stuff. Like, I wanted to be a novelist, air quotes again. And I never even thought, well, why don't you why don't you want to write for TV? You know, mm-hmm. because I didn't connect those dots. There was nobody, by the way, to help me connect the dots. Nobody right. just said, hey, you want to be a writer? You have a good ear. Because I mm-hmm. did write in school and I did well with it. And teachers told me I had a good ear, but, you know, for dialogue. But nobody was telling me perhaps, you know, writing for television or this, because it wasn't anything that anybody thought of. So it was just, I guess it was there in the back of my mind. And it was just like, I'll just try this, yeah. you know, to do this. So yeah, and I had no idea that I was,
you know, as a parent,
so much preparation for it.
So I have four kids and I used to have these like very stringent time restrictions on everything. But like, I keep interviewing people like you, or like I read about Simone Biles, who's like, I sat and watched gymnastics for videos for like 4 hours a day. And I'm like, maybe she wouldn't have been Simone Biles if her mom had been like, you can only watch 30 minutes a day. You know,
you're right, like, by
you
the way,
you wouldn't be a sitcom writer if you had only watched 30
minutes. I'm telling you, no, I definitely, I mean, I'm not, this is not to advocate for parents leaving their children in front of the TV for, you know, 12 hours, which is about how much I watched it like it was my job. I mean, it was like I had, you know, but it was, I also was engaging with it in a weird way. You know, I was a lonely kid and it was more than a lifeline. It was, you know, it activated kind of something in me, my imagination in a way. So yeah. And it is, I do believe that Simone Biles, of course, that helped. I mean, she's extraordinary, obviously, but I think that also is a form of training. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly mentally. And yeah, I know it's ironic that it ended up this way. I mean, my mom is so pleased. I'm like, they complained about how much TV I watched, obviously, but there was nothing to be done about it. You know, I was always watching it. It was like, oh my God, like it ended up being a good thing.
You never know. You never know what's going to go on with your kids or anything else.
Totally.
Just last question, but are you reading anything good now or have you read anything amazing lately?
Yeah. You know, I just read, oh my God, I read so much that everything kind of blends together, but I just read Edith Wharton for the first time, the novel with Lily Bart, not The Age of Innocence, The House of Mirth. I just read The House of Mirth because The Gilded Age was on and I was watching The Gilded Age and I was like, I want to read an Edith Wharton novel. And I had never read The House of Mirth and it's so good. Oh my God. Oh my God. I was like, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Yeah. So The House of Mirth. And I read Elena Ferrante's new book, The Lying Life of Adults as well. Just
awesome.
Recently.
Very
yeah.
cool.
I love her too. And Sally Rooney.
Yeah.
I love Sally Rooney.
Everybody loves Sally Rooney.
I know.
Go to.
She's great.
Okay. Gary, thank you so much. This is so fun. And thank you for making me laugh. I feel like we all need a good laugh right about now in the world. And
thank you.
It's coming at the perfect time. So good luck with your tour and have fun.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Zibby. It was a pleasure.
Okay. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.